This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. longest running weekly episodic sports podcast produced and hosted by two or more African Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus Vandenberg. Brother Marcus, we back at it again for another week, man.
What's up, man? How you doing?
I am doing good, man. I had an interesting week at work. Like I told you guys a little bit about the unrest of the regime change, if you will, at my place of employment. And as a result, I went from, you know, working, you know, 30, 35, 40 sometimes hours a week to, I think this past week, I ended up on the clock out on Sunday night, I think I had like close to 60 hours.
Damn.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where, like, I hated it last week, but I know in a couple of weeks when I get that check, it'll be worth it.
That's one way of looking at it. There you go.
You know, like, you know, sometimes you got to go through some stuff so you can get some stuff.
Yeah.
So, speaking of going through some stuff, Marcus, we got to get into a lot of things this week. But before we do that, how was your week?
It was all right. Nothing really special going on that I can think of. Next week I'm off to Texas, so I think we can bring back. It's safe to bring back TJ.
Is it though? Like, is you ain't gonna catch Ebola, are you?
No. I am going to Dallas at some point, so that's an issue. But no, I'm headed to Texas. I'm headed to Hell in a Cell, which is not looking to be a great show at all. But yeah, so that should be fun. We're heading down to Austin as well. So I've never been there.
Yeah, Hell in a Cell with no world title match, and the main event is between two guys who a year ago weren't even main eventers.
Yeah, that's going to be weird. And don't forget Cena Orton, 25.
The 25th anniversary of you seeing this match.
And
in a cell.
Hella Bella in a cell. I don't think the cell is on the part is going to happen, but at least we're getting the Bellas in a match. I hope it's in the cell. That'd be so great.
So what you're saying is at this point, Ebola might be the better of the two options?
At least you know you're going to pay off for Ebola.
So yeah. So you said you've never been to Austin.
Never been to Austin, no. I've been to Houston. I've been to Dallas.
That's well, then again, Austin's not a big, I mean, it's a college town, but it's not a big pro sports town.
Yeah, and it's sort of out of the way. I mean, it's sort of, you know, by itself down there. So I've never been anywhere close to even get to Austin. So this is my first time.
Austin's interesting. I've been through Austin because I've got relatives out in Texas, but just kind of going through Austin to get there, it's interesting. It's like somebody took, it's like this weird amalgamation. It's like a little bit of Nashville, a little bit of San Francisco, and they stuck it in the middle of Texas. Because it's so, and you add in a college town vibe to that.
That's right, you too.
It's not what you would stereotypically think of Texas.
Well, they do have the motto, keep Austin weird, so we'll see how weird it actually is down there.
Yes.
But I'm looking forward to the food, for sure.
And maybe TJ can be your tour guide. Is he going to Hell in a Cell?
I don't think he is. I'm going to spend part of Friday down there for sure. So, and then I'll be visiting my cousin who's stationed, she's in the military, so she's at Fort Hood. So she's in between Dallas and Austin.
Okay. Interesting. You ever been in Cowboys Stadium?
Yes, I covered the Super Bowl, was it 2011?
Okay, because I was going to say, if you haven't been to Jerry World, that might be your chance to swing by.
Yeah, I've been there. I thought about doing Redskins Cowboys that Monday night, but tickets are a little expensive, so.
Plus, you're like, man, I ain't driving out of the way to go see Kirk Cousins, man.
That too. If RG3 was playing, that'd be one thing, but, you know.
Ain't nobody wasting gas in this economy to see some damn Kirk Cousins.
That'd be another one-sided game for sure. At the way the Cowboys are playing, it's going to be not much of a game.
Oh, man. So, yeah, lots of good stuff to talk about this week. We, of course, have Second Down coming up in the program. We've got a great conversation with friend of the program, Cam Powell. We've got all the ratchetness that you come to expect from Segment 4. And we have the return of Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. But before we get into that, Marcus, last week we left the listeners with a cliffhanger. In Segment 1 last week in the A Block, offhandedly, I just asked you, you know, about your heritage, about your lineage, because the Vanderburg, I get where Marcus comes from, but the Vanderburg
Marcus
is always...
Marcus Garvey, of course.
The Vanderburg has always thrown me off. So I'm like, you know what? Let me ask this dude about his history. And you said that you need to take some time, take a week, and make sure you had all your facts and figures right, get the research done. And so now, me and the rest of the Kings of Sport Nation are waiting with patient ears to hear the secret origins of one brother Marcus Vanderburg.
Well, this is going to be a letdown because I tried searching for this stupid email and I couldn't find it. I did find a G-Chat conversation I had with my mom. And so my dad was the one who sent me the email with the information. I can't find an email. But I do know that he took the DNA, the Ancestry.com DNA test, and he came back with his African roots for 52%. The rest are from Europe. And the part that I wanted to know was the European part, which was the 48%. And I don't have the information. But on the African side, 22% from Ivory Coast, Ghana area. So not a bit nasty. 13% Nigeria and 7% from Cameroon and the Congo.
So you got some Nigerian in you. That's probably why you and Alfred butted heads a lot.
Just a little bit, though.
Africans and the Liberians and the Nigerians.
By the way, isn't Liberia like Ebola Central?
I think that's where the first patient came from.
Yeah. He did go there last year, right?
He did.
All right.
And didn't the that publicist that got in all that trouble, didn't she go there too? The one that was like, I won't get AIDS because I'm white?
No, South Africa. She was flying
South Africa. Okay. But,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a half of me or... Not so much half of me, but half of my ancestors do embrace the European side. And maybe next week, if I can find this email, I can get you the European side.
Yeah, I got to say, Marcus, no disrespect, but that was pretty anticlimactic.
Listen, if you watch...
Look, you're telling me the part I already know. I know that
I know,
part.
I know.
I want the European
and
part.
And I can tell you the part about once we got to the United States as slaves. I know that part, but... The slave master part I can't find. So,
like, who was the man that owns your great 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 grandpappy? Like, where did he live?
Yes, that's what we're trying to.
That's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
Like, we want to hear your Alex Haley root story. We want to hear about Kunta Vanderburg.
Roots, by the way, that's something that everyone should watch at least once. A lot of comedy in Roots, by the way. Chicken George.
Is that Ben Vereen?
Yeah, comedic genius.
Who was also the mayor of Zubily Zoo. I don't know who remembers Zubily Zoo out there, but at least one or two people. Yeah. One or two people popped for that. It was Ben Vereen, Grant, well, not Grammy, but what's the one that you get for stage? Tony. Tony Award winning, I believe, Ben Vereen, you know, just a great actor, singer, dancer. He was in one of my favorite movies. But I forgot the title. I'll let you guys know in a minute. But he went from that to Roots, and then he went from Roots to starring in a show called Zubily Zoo. And Zubily Zoo was basically a community of animals that were people, but they were animals. And Ben Vereen was the mayor of Zubily Zoo, and a lot of times there was troubles, you know, people was getting into arguments, somebody would come into town trying to stir up some stuff, and Ben Vereen, in his capacity as the mayor, and I guess also apparently police chief, was going to settle these problems through song and teamwork.
Wow. So, and you watched the show.
It was pretty much all that was on back in that. It was on PBS, like, after school.
Let's see here. 19. Oh, okay, this is before my time. It's 86, 87. So, yeah, I don't remember this.
All right. And the movie that I was looking for, yeah, he won a Tony Award for Pippin in 1973. But in terms of movie, All That Jazz. All That Jazz is a great movie. I don't know if you haven't seen it.
Of course not. Why are you asking me silly questions?
All That Jazz is basically a musical version of Bob Fosse's life. Of course, Bob Fosse, the dancer, choreographer, and all that good stuff, director, did a basically an adaptation of his own life called All That Jazz. And it's starring Roy Scheider and Jessica Lange and Ben Vereen as just kind of like he keeps going through these dream sequences, and Ben Vereen is like the musical director and host in these dream sequences, and it's very cool. Like, it's just the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And I watched it when I was taking film class in college, and I've watched it a few times since, and I don't know if it's a good movie, but I know that it's an interesting movie.
Nothing will top his Fresh Prince appearance, right?
Yeah, I think his Fresh Prince appearance may be his
notable.
Yeah.
Not his appearance on Silk Stockings.
I didn't know Ben Vereen was still doing work, though. Ben Vereen was in NCIS last year. He was in a bunch of episodes of How I Met Your Mother. Law and Order, Criminal Intent, as Reverend Jeremiah Morris.
And he's the first cousin once removed of Shane Vereen.
Bam, bringing it back to sports.
Patriots running back.
So, yeah. How'd we get here? Oh, yeah, your family lineage. Yes.
Roots, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, some people out there might be satisfied, but I think I can speak for the majority of Kings of Sport Nation when we say, you know, we will not rest until we hear the truth, the full story, Marcus.
All right, I'll reach out to my dad, who's probably listening. I know it's
kind of tricky because, like, most black people's lineage gets a little murky around the 18th and 19th century. So, you know, it may take a little while, but I want to hear whether. What is it, a Dutch man? Is it a Norwegian man? A Scandinavian man? Who is this Vandenberg, and how did he end up in America?
Who gave me this good hair?
Yes. Who violated my ancestor and gave me this fantastic hair and this El DeBarge complexion? I mean, you take the good and the bad, I guess.
Yeah.
Slavery.
Nothing but jokes.
Nothing but jokes. That should be just the button on everything. Just slavery. Let's get into something we just teased a little while ago, Marcus, that may bring up the mood a little bit after all this talk about genealogy. Let's talk about hockey. Hockey, the NHL is back. And with the return of the NHL comes the return of everyone's favorite Kings of Sport mini segment, Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
Yes, hockey's back. I think that mentioned this on the show, that I'm doing more hockey stuff at work this year. I wonder if I need to ask the Hockey Negro onto Yahoo Sports. That might be a stretch. So I'm actually paying.
You have to switch it up a little bit. Ask a hockey neighbor.
Yeah, a brother. Maybe ask a hockey brother. I don't know. We'll think of something. We'll have to pitch this.
How far can you push this at Yahoo, Marcus?
Negro probably not gonna happen. Maybe code. What's another code term for black?
You could be the urban
hockey
expert.
Don't say lazy.
The urban hockey expert.
Yeah, we'll think of something. But yeah, I'm paying more attention to hockey this season. But I did, before we, we'll spare you at least 1 week, a deep dive into hockey talk. But there is a Colin Cowherd interview or segment from last week where he said the following, quote, he was talking to a caller. By the way, African-American men do not watch hockey. I have seen the numbers. I can tell you every sport who watches it, even among men, racial differences. Ethnicity differences. African-American men do not watch hockey. They do watch, at a higher percentage, basketball. It's okay. Neither is good. Neither is bad. It's okay. And he was talking to a caller named Holly. And, you know, is he true? I guess, but does it make it right? I just feel like, you know, when you're talking about such a broad statement that all African American men don't watch hockey. Yeah, you can find one or two like me, and you know, if you take out hockey and plug that in for, you know, something else when you're talking about African American men and these broad stereotypes, and that's where I have the issue. So yes, Colin Cowherd, there are African-American men who do watch hockey, who do like hockey. It's still my favorite sport to watch in person. I feel like people who are on the fence about hockey need to go watch hockey in person, and that will sort of, you know, convert you into a hockey fan. But I'm surprised there wasn't more of a uproar, especially with ESPN, the way they're suspending people. This one sort of went under the radar. Deadspin picked up on it, but there was no real backlash for what Cowherd had to say.
Well, first of all, let me just say, full disclosure, I'm not a fan at all of Colin Cowherd. He is, in a roundabout sort of way, one of the impetuses for me starting this show, just as a response to, I mean, let's say he's good at what he does, but I think what he does is part of what's problematic about sports talk. Like, there's little creativity. It's formulaic. You know what you're going to get. If you listen to Cowherd, then you've probably heard every local guy in all 50 states.
Yeah.
Because they're doing a watered-down Cowherd, and he's doing a watered-down impression of the guy before him, who's probably doing a watered-down impression of Jim Rome. So it's like you get so far from the original that you've got all these imitators, all these clones, and not in the good sense, not in the Jim Rome clone sense, but in the sense of, you know, is it live or is it Memorex? And I think that Colin is an interesting person to listen to. Like, I think when he's on other people's shows, he's probably actually better than when he's on his own show, because he was on Dan Le Batard recently, and him and Bomani got into a pretty good exchange about violence in the NFL for about 10, 15 minutes. And it was just cool to see somebody who, like, the other problem I have with Cowherd is he's one of these hosts that thinks he's the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he's not smart, but it's just like, I'm not a fan of talking down to your audience. Even like, we talk to wrestling fans a lot of the time, and we don't even really talk down to them. I mean, we will occasionally, because your marks deserve it, but...
No, if you want, you know, that wrestling talk down to, listen to Rosenberg and
the Masked Man. Oh, the Masked Man.
Yeah, that's what their show has turned into. It's all gimmick, all you marks. And it's like, you know, we like to poke fun, but at the end of the day, we want you to listen to the show. We don't want you to not listen because we're talking down to you, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fine line between, you know, kind of kneeling your audience and then just being an outright dick to your audience, which, yeah, is, I think Cowherd crosses that line on a regular basis. He's a habitual line stepper. But in terms of this argument, Yeah, I think it has merit just in the fact that, you know, is it shocking to anybody that black men would tend to watch more NBA games than NHL games? Like, nah. Like, to quote Alfred Cunningham on, I believe, one of the first episodes of the show we ever did, you know, what's next? The sky is blue, water is wet, and Tiger Woods like white women?
Yeah.
Like, that's not news. But in terms of just making definitive blanket statements, you can't do that with anything.
And as Richard Deitz pointed out on Twitter, Sports Illustrated Media Critic, he cited no facts. Just no data. He just tossed it out there like it was true. There's no information to back it up with, and I think that's the issue. Is if you're going to make a statement like that, especially such a broad statement about a race, then at least cite the numbers that say people don't watch. Don't say, oh, I've seen the numbers. Okay, what are the numbers then if you've seen them? So.
And aren't you pulling from a small pool anyway? Because NHL television numbers outside of the playoffs aren't what they once were.
Yeah.
They're not, you know what I mean? They've been relegated to these smaller channels, NBC Sportsnet and some of these other channels on the periphery. They're not on ESPN anymore. So your pool that you're drawing from is smaller in the first place. So if you've gone from, let's say, 3 billion or 3 million people that could have been watching the show to 1 million people, you've already cut that down. And the number of black people that were in that 3 million compared to the number of black people in the 1 million is obviously proportionally smaller. So, you know, it's I think he likes to do this just to get attention, just to seem like he's controversial, when in reality it's like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're wasting our time for this.
Yeah, we'll have to get Kevin Weeks on the show. Former goaltender, now turned NHL broadcaster, because he's, I believe, the only on-air broadcaster, African-American, currently at the moment. So we'll have to get him on the show at some point.
I think that's a good idea. You know, I wouldn't say that hockey is becoming, like, black people aren't taking over hockey, but I think that, you know, with guys like Seth Jones in the league, like, you're seeing a new wave, a new generation of, you know, young guys that are getting into hockey. And when I was up in Canada, it was crazy because, you know, like, you go around to the park and see kids of all ages and all races playing basketball. That's how it was with hockey. And so it wasn't out of the question to see, you know, a group of black kids playing hockey. As strange as that may sound to a lot of us in America, especially in the South, you know, it was just as normal as seeing kids playing sandlot football or a game of pickup basketball.
Yeah, and similar to what MLB is doing with RBI, NHL is a similar program where they have different organizations throughout the country in the inner city that promote the sport of hockey. And I think, you know, we've seen an increase, or at least I've seen an increase, of more black players coming into the league. And not only black players, but black American players coming into the league. Because usually with the black guys, they have, like Wayne Simmonds, for example, on the Flyers. He is Canadian. He's from Ontario area, I think Mississauga maybe. But his roots are, I believe, I want to say Wayne is Jamaican. Don't quote me on that. Let's see here.
That sounds about right.
From Scarborough, up north in Ontario. I can't find his roots. But yeah, he's got Canadian ties, but also he's got some heritage within the Caribbean area. So, we're seeing more African-American. You mentioned Seth Jones, who's a black American, who's came into the league last year and has done pretty well, considering he's only, I want to say Seth is only 18, 19 now. So that having more guys like, he's 20, having more guys like Seth Jones where people can relate to and see a guy who decided, you know, he decided to, his father's Popeye Jones, he tried to play basketball, but he instead decided to play hockey, and he's pretty good at it. So with time, I think we'll see more, not only the diversity in the sport, but diversity in the TV viewing audience.
I agree. So, take that, Colin Cowherd.
Yeah, he's not listening, so that's all right.
That was Ask a Hockey Negro. If he was, he'd leave us a voicemail. I got a question for you, Hockey Negro.
Yeah.
How in the hell did you watch hockey? Did you steal cable? Because I've got statistics that say 40% of black men steal cable.
I've seen the numbers, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the numbers. You and your fraudulent statistical analysis, Colin Cowherd. He's terrible. Like, and I know that, because I've had discussions with people about Colin Cowherd, people that really like him, and they'll be like, oh, Nate, man, you just hating because he got a show and you don't. And I'm like, yeah, that's a fair point. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that do that job that I respect and actually am a fan of. But his style of broadcasting is just like, I've never gotten into it. Like and what made it so bad, I think, for me, what set it off on the wrong foot for me, because I've hated Cowherd since the first time I heard him, mm-hmm. was that he replaced Tony Kornheiser.
Yeah.
And it's like, you go from Tony Kornheiser to this guy. You go from a guy who, and the crazy thing is, both of them kind of had the intellectual gimmick going, but Tony, it was real. Colin, I feel like he puts on, like, he's got to show you that he's the smartest guy out there.
By the way, we mentioned Wayne Simmonds, currently leading the league in goals after a week, 4 goals. So,
I mean, just look at the statistics. Only 1% of the people leading the NHL in goals are black. It's only one guy. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other thing that gets me before we go to break, he always got to bring his kids into some stuff, man.
Oh, I don't listen. I can't listen to anything on ESPN Radio.
Oh, man, because he did this on Dan Levitard's show, trying to school Bomani Jones, because Bomani had said something about, you know, that, because Colin was like, you know, people make choices to play NFL football. And Bomani was like, you know, it is a choice, but we need to realize the socioeconomical circumstances that have kind of led them to this choice, mm-hmm. which is a really good point that a lot of people miss out on. And Colin was like, well, it's like this, Bomani. I mean, I've got a child. My son is 8 years old, and he knows if he hits his head, it's going to hurt. So why would he do that? You know, my 8-year-old son knows that, Bomani. Why can't these guys? I mean, it's crazy. That's a damn good Colin Cowherd right there. On second thought, hey, Colin, man, you my dog. If you ever get sick and you need a day off,
you can fill in.
I can fill in. What are we talking about here? You're listening to The Herd. So, that's going to do it for the A Block. Cross another potential guest off the list.
Oh, thank you. That's fine.
Colin Cowherd will not be on the Kings of Sport in the future. But I know who will be, Marcus. Cam Powell, friend of the program, blogger, and sports enthusiast. We're going to talk some college football. We're going to talk some NFL football. So don't you guys go anywhere. Stick and stay. We got more Kings of Sport right after this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your pigskin preview, your gridiron gabfest, and your weekly football focus. It's time for Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow. The whistle blows. We
weekend warriors toe-to-toe football.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, and if you're hearing that music, it could mean only one thing. It is time once again for Second Down, our weekly football focus, where we take a look at the world of the NFL and the NCAA and just talk about some of the hot topics in the world of football. And we've got a special guest joining us this week. He joined us way back on episode 6 last year. He's a friend of the program. He's a former broadcast colleague of mine. He's a blogger. And he's our very own college football expert, the one and only Cam Powell. What is going on, my brother?
Not much, Nate. Thank you for the kind intro. Marcus, thank you guys for having me.
It's been that long. Wow.
Yeah, it's back on episode 6. And it's funny, because I was looking this up, Marcus, and you might find this little bit of Kings of Sport trivia interesting. Guess who he was sandwiched in between in terms of the guest on episode 5 and the guest on episode 7, because they are two of our most memorable guests for two very different reasons.
Oh, I know Bomani was episode 7, right?
Well, you're half right on that.
Was he episode 5?
Yeah, Bo was episode 5. Cam was episode 6.
And then episode 7... That wasn't Hollywood Simpson, no?
No, that was much later. Hollywood was much later. Let's just say he was somebody who was had a lot of promise, a lot of talk, but the promise was unrealized.
Oh, our St. Croix jockey.
Kevin Krieger. Krieger, please. Yeah, it's okay for you to laugh at that, Cam.
I forgot about Mr. Kevin Krieger.
Yeah, Bomani Jones of
We got him right before he went to ESPN, because otherwise that interview would not be happening on our show. So.
Yep, because at the time, if you go back and look at our Facebook page, facebook.com/KingsOfSport, he's listed as, you know, host of the Evening Jones. That's the first credit, / ESPN contributor, because he was not officially in the fold at the time. And then, I guess, what was it, like a couple weeks after that?
Yeah, a couple weeks after that, he became official.
Yep, he joined Highly Questionable with Dan Le Batard and Poppy, and then... The following week was Cam, and then after that was Kevin Krieger, who guaranteed not only a win at the Kentucky Derby, but a Triple Crown.
Yeah, so.
Didn't even place in the top 3 of the Kentucky Derby, though.
Wasn't he like last? He was like towards the back.
I don't think he was dead last, but at that, point, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Bonus points, Marcus, if you can remember the name of his horse.
Oh, I got no idea.
Do you remember, Cam?
Oh, man, I've got no clue.
I couldn't even tell you who won the Kentucky Derby last year.
Yeah, I don't
even
know.
Let alone the 13th place horse.
Yeah, the horse was Golden Sense.
Oh, yeah, there's no way.
So you're part of Kings of Sport lore, Marcus. Like this first, I mean, Cam, like I'm just going back and looking at like the first 10 guests. The first 15 guests, actually. It's like a grab bag of just random personalities.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, I didn't even realize that I followed Bo. I know you guys had him on, but that's cool. I had a Twitter exchange with him like 3 years ago when he like was kind of first breaking on around the horn, and he's always been one of my favorites, and I thought that was like the coolest thing ever, and now, you know, he's blowing up doing his thing with Dan and Poppy, so that's awesome.
He didn't block you, right, on Twitter?
I was going to say, you didn't get blocked.
All right,
he did not block me. No, it was cool. He's a big music buff, and so it was the same day that Big Boy's new record dropped.
Yeah.
And oh man,
yeah, Bo loves some Outkast.
Yeah, and so you know, I was picking his brain about what he thought about it, since a lot of people were kind of throwing shade on it. I enjoyed it. He enjoyed it too. I was glad that he responded.
That was the Lucius Left Foot with the.
It was the segment. That one is hot fire. That's one of my favorite records of all time. It was Vicious Lies and Dangerous Rumors, follow up to it. It's good. It's just not as good.
Okay. Yeah, that I think, and that, Marcus, I think we just got a drop for the show right there. Anytime one of us makes a good point, we'll play the Cam Pal hot fire drop. You're like, that was hot fire.
The whitest drop of all time. Oh.
Oh yeah, but
I hope you use that.
We will.
Trust me. He will.
I've marked down the time and everything. Yeah, yeah. But next time Marcus makes a good point of like about Yasiel Puig, you hear that was hot fire.
Yes.
You just got cammed. All right. But speaking of somebody that got dropped, man, let's start in the world of college football and a team that I had high hopes for when Marcus and I did our college football preseason preview or season preview. And that is Todd Gurley, running back for the Georgia Bulldogs. And Marcus, this story broke, I think it broke the day after we recorded.
Yeah, I think
so. Last week. So for those that may only get their sports through us, let people know what happened with the guy that for many folks out there was a Heisman hopeful.
So Todd Gurley was suspended indefinitely by Georgia after it was discovered that he had signed a series of autographs and he made money off these autographs. And as we will discuss later, Jameis Winston, he was also caught up with the same, not dealer, what I don't know what the term is for the autograph person, but the same guy who was doing the autographs for Gurley was also allegedly involved with Jameis as well. So Georgia went ahead and sat him down. And it didn't bother them this past week, and they shut out Missouri. But it's still up in the air whether he's going to return this season or not. But, you know, as we can ask him, if I'm Todd Gurley, I don't want to return. You know, he's not going to win the Heisman at this point. He's, you know, saving his body. He's going to be a first-round pick. It's not going to impact his draft stuff. So why would Todd Gurley want to come back to this point?
I agree with you there. I mean, the prospect of, you know, losing out on being one of those top picks by, you know, by coming back and risking an injury just isn't worth it. I think, you know, last year I live in Columbia, South Carolina, and I'm a Gamecock alum. Last year there was all that talk of Jadeveon Clowney sitting out his entire season to preserve his draft stock. While I thought it was, you know, I didn't think he would do it, I thought that it was a reasonable move for him, just because of what's at stake. You know, the difference in the contract between, you know, a top 10 pick and a late first rounder is huge, even just in the rookie deals. So, yeah, I think Gurley, I think he should be done at Georgia just because of what's at stake for his future. And, you know, the team seems to be doing all right without him. I'm not sure. Their schedule is actually one of the more favorable ones left out of these top SEC teams as far as they've already gone through some of their hardest tests. So they might be able to do it without him even to come out and emerge on the top of the East.
Yeah, I think just looking at their schedule, they've got Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Auburn, the mighty Charleston Southern, and then they finish things up with Georgia Tech. So to me, the only motivation if I'm Gurley to come back is to see if we can make a run at grabbing one of those four playoff seeds. But if I'm Gurley, I don't even know if I want to do that because of the way my head coach kind of hung me out there to dry. Because when this thing kind of came to light, Mark Richt was out there and people asking him about this and his thoughts about the situation. And he's like, I'm just real disappointed in Todd. You know, he should have known better. And you can make the argument that whether you agree with the rule or not, it is the rule, and you, the onus is on you to follow the rule. But, and you might have a different opinion, Cam. I'd be interested to hear, because A, you're a little bit closer to the collegiate age than Marcus or myself. But B, you just might have a different opinion altogether. But I'm thinking if I'm Todd Gurley, it's like, the school and the university makes millions of dollars off my name and likeness. I cannot get a job. I have scholarships that are year to year. I can't make some change off of my name and my likeness. To me, it just seems I don't know what I expected Rick to do, because of course he's got to protect his own self. But if I'm Gurley, I'd be looking at my coach like, "Hey man, you don't have my back."
Yeah, you know, Rick has got to stick to the company line as far as, you know, being a head coach at a major school, you know, in the NCAA. But, you know, I would think that all three of us are in agreement that the rule was ridiculous. I understand where Rick is coming from. is the rule. You should definitely know better, especially with the guys who work as these autograph brokers who are willing to, you know, kind of seek out college kids to do their signings. And, you know, that's the biggest thing for me that kills me about this story is that, you know, it's one of these memorabilia dealers who thought he had kind of an exclusive deal with Gurley, and Gurley did some signings for him and then started going and doing signings for other guys. So the, you know, the value of the stuff that he had in his signings started going down because the market's getting flooded with more Gurley signatures. And, you know, he was essentially, he was just kind of a, you know, it was a spiteful move. He's the guy who started tipping off Sports Illustrated. And I think I've got the Deadspin article pulled up. He was emailing them, seeing if he could get any money for the story. You know, it's just some idiot somewhere, you know, another person trying to make money off of these kids and wanting to blow the whistle, you know, saying, oh, I'm the one who gave him straight cash. It's, you know, it's just terrible. I think the whole, you know, for me, really, the Fab Five documentary was one of the things that kind of blew up the idea of not paying players. You know, seeing how poor Chris Webber and Jalen Rose were when they were in Michigan, and the fact that, you know, that's a huge reason why C. Webb left Michigan and has not had a good relationship with them since. That really, you know, kind of opened up the discussion for at least me and my friend group. And ever since then, it just seems inevitable that something's going to have to give as far as these major D1 schools being able to compensate their athletes for their likeness.
Yeah, I can't blame Rick. I mean, I'm sure privately he's probably talked to Todd and said, hey, look, I understand. But listen, the rules are the rules. And if you're going to do that, then, you know, you can't really be upset when your coach has to, you know, save his job and say, hey, look, what you did is wrong. But I'm sure privately that he's probably had a conversation with him and said, hey, look, if you really needed the money, then I understand where you're coming from. So,
and is this like, yeah, let's get back to the rule. Like, you know, all three of us are in agreement. It's just an idiotic rule, but I don't even see where the basis for it, you know, maybe, you know, because we are using rules that are what, nearly 100 years old, Marcus?
A little archaic. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Quite.
So, you know, I there may have been a reason back in the day for the rule to be implemented, but let's just look at it from a practical point of view. Marcus, you went to school for journalism?
Yes.
Cam, did you go to school for journalism?
I did, yep.
If either one of you were offered to do a paid internship for a magazine while you were in school, was there anything prohibiting you guys from taking that opportunity?
No, I made lots of money in school.
Yeah, absolutely not, yeah.
So, I don't see why an athlete, you know, regardless of the sport, should not be allowed to broker on their skill set in order to get some extra change. You know, this ideal of these are student athletes and they're scholars. And then, first of all, a good percentage of these guys are not in this game for the education. No. They're in this game for a way out, for a better opportunity. The same reason a lot of people join the military or a lot of people go to work straight out of high school. You know, you do what you can to better your family situation, to better your own situation, and to put these rules in place and do this facade, this dog and pony show of this is collegiate athletics. And you've got people out there, well, these guys get an education. It should be enough that they get a free education. But like I said, man, a scholarship is year to year. It's not, you know, you don't get 4 years straight up. At any time, the school can revoke that scholarship, and then where are you at if you're the player?
Yeah, exactly. And most of the kids, you know, like the Manziels, the Gurleys, the Winstons, who the schools are making the money off of, who the, you know, the fans are going to buy that number 2 tech. They're going to buy that number 3 Georgia jersey. Those are the guys that everybody knows they're not staying 4 years anyways. They're likely not going to get their degree, you know, possibly if they want to go back after their playing career is over in the pros, maybe. But so the argument of education, you know, as compensation for, you know, as what they get on their end of the deal really is ridiculous. I think there's a TMZ video last year after, like, on draft night or just before it, where a reporter came up to Jadeveon Clowney, put a camera in his face and was like, hey, Clowney, how many classes did you go to this year? And he just laughed and got in a limousine. I think that's pretty telling. I mean, you know, most of these institutions have things in place and they eventually get caught where, you know, their athletes are taking the easiest classes they possibly can and attendance is, you know, barely needed, you know. So to say that education is a part of it is just, it's really mocking the whole system.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the outliers. There's always the guys you hear about who graduate in 3 years and who are, you know, sticking around to do their masters.
Oh, for sure.
They're usually not the guys who are making the money professionally at the next level.
Yeah, and then, like, I agree with you, Marcus, and there's, you know, I'm not going to say every kid is just there for the sport because, let's face it, most of these kids are not going to that next level. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just such a facade that they're like, this is about education, when in most states with big-time football, the highest paid public official or public employee, is the football coach.
Yeah.
Not the governor, not the mayor, not the police chief. It's the football coach. So, you know, let's be real with it. The college football, it's great. I love it. You guys love it. We all love it. But let's call a spade. It's basically a training ground for the NFL. It's a pipeline for the NFL. These kids have no other option. You know, it's not like the NBA where they can go overseas and play ball, or it's not like they have a D-League set up. College football is the NFL's D-League. So let's quit playing around. You know, they just had the O'Bannon case for that lawsuit. You know, let's take care of these players. I'm not saying that they should be getting wealthy in college, but it shouldn't be a case where you got – these kids that are earning a majority of your school's income and revenue, and they get in such trouble for just trying to live a college life like most of us when we went to college. Like, you know, you want to have money to have fun. You want to have money to go out on dates, go to the movies, you know, have pizza and beer and just be a dumb kid. And we're expecting so much of these young men and women playing these collegiate sports. But at the same time, what are we giving them? You know, and I don't think in 2014 that the education argument flies anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be in favor of a stipend for athletes based on the revenue your sport brings in. And also, on top of that, I would be in favor of these guys being allowed to make money off their likeness, and that money they would be able to receive once they left the institution. So it would just be, you know, occurring somewhere in a bank, and then once they decided to leave, then they would, you know, get that money on the way out.
Yeah, and that would solve help. Well, it wouldn't solve, but it would definitely help another problem, which is, you know, like we said, a lot of these guys are not going to that next level, and we've established that a good number of them, not most, not all, but a good number of them aren't taking their education seriously because they're there to play sports. And if you don't go to that next level and school is done, what are you going to do? You have no discernible skills other than hitting the ball, running the ball, shooting the ball. And, you know, these guys have nothing to fall back on. So if they've got a little bit of change saved up from their time in college, then that can help them, you know, adjust to life after sport when it comes earlier than they expected.
Which leads us to Jameis Winston.
I usually make the segues on this show, Cam, but I'm so tired of talking about Jameis, man. Like,
isn't everybody? I mean, it's I suppose the only times that I enjoy talking about it are just when it's all comedy at this point. It's, you know, at least, you know, among me and my friends, and not know his situation is very serious and should be taken as such.
I was gonna say, but I don't think Jameis is laughing.
But it doesn't seem like he takes it very seriously. And, you know, the rest of us just from the outside in, it's kind of like, are you kidding me? Like, this is it's hard to believe that it's still gotten to this point. And then, you know, you have the fact that they're still the, you know, number two team in the country, that it hasn't yet, it hasn't caught up to them on the field. So,
yeah, that's crazy to me, Marcus. Like, Florida State won, dropped to number two, but that was the secondary story.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk Ole Miss and Mississippi State later on, but yeah, they did drop.
Speaking of potential violations, I ain't saying. I'm just saying. I don't know how those schools got that good to say.
Ole Miss has already been through that allegation before.
When they did.
Their recruiting class a couple years ago when they had all these five-star guys on Ole Miss. But
I'm just saying, I got family in Mississippi. It's nice down there, but I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it hasn't impacted his play on the field. I mean, Florida State's still undefeated. They get Notre Dame this weekend, which will be, will probably knock out one of those two teams from the playoffs in the end. So, I you know, will Florida State suspend Jameis like Georgia did? Probably not, just knowing the way Florida State operates.
I mean, really, though, like, just to play devil's advocate and be fair to Jameis, like, has he done anything new, like, since he was, since the last time? Like, has he done anything worthy of being suspended? Like, because this seems to me more a fault in the investigation process, which...
Oh, no, I'm talking about the,
you're talking about the
early. Yeah.
Okay, you're talking about that, yeah.
No,
that,
the Title IX thing is still going on, the investigation with that. But I think if he is under suspended, it'll be for the autographs first and not the investigations going on.
If he is suspended, again, to be fair to Jameis, it should only be for a half, like Johnny Manziel.
Well, they never proved that Manziel took money. That's why he only got the half. And that's why
a half against Rice, which you recall, is it didn't mean anything.
And that's the difference between him and Gurley. Gurley, they discovered that he was didn't pay it. They couldn't trace the money back to Manziel. I mean, trust me, Jameis isn't that smart to hide the money. So if they do find out he took the money, he's gonna have to sit down. And
now Jameis was going back to campus. Who wants some crab legs, baby? Yeah. He ain't got to steal.
Yeah, Florida State, you know, for as far as they had tried to come from Free Shoes University, the Jameis Winston campaign has set them back quite a bit, I would say, you know, just at least in the public eye.
You know who Jameis Winston is, though, really? And, you know, I hate to say it because I actually like Jameis Winston as a player, but you guys remember the coded language that people use to talk about Cam Newton when he was at Auburn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that in real life, in all actuality, Cam Newton, if you listen to him talk and speak at length for any amount of time, he is, I won't say 180 degrees away from what those people were saying, but he's pretty damn close to that. Like, Cam Newton is not what they said he was, but I do think that Jameis Winston is closer to what people said Cam Newton was than Cam Newton was, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, Cam was polarizing, but I think that had more to do with people reading into Cam what they wanted to read. Jameis is just a knucklehead.
I would say that Robert Griffin is more closer to Cam Newton than what Cam Newton turned out to be in terms of being a me first guy and just sort of,
you know,
it's all about RG3. And that's what they're trying to label on Cam in college, and oh, he's so confident, so cocky, and you know, and you, as a quarterback, just part of that, you have to be that way. I mean, that's just natural for that position. Yeah, I would want someone who cared about the game and had leadership skills like that. So with RG3, I granted he's hurt again, but I've never seen really him embrace that role on the field yet. So.
I think another thing, you know, in the, you know, Jameis Cam comparison is Cam Newton, you know, just kind of showed up at Auburn. People really didn't know a whole lot about him. And so they went rifling through his past to try and, you know, find these things. Well, you know, how did he end up at Auburn? What happened at Florida with the, you know, with the laptop issue? And so people started bringing these things up. And, you know, once he was cleared, you know, they ended up winning the title. He went pro and he never looked back. There was nothing ever, you know, he didn't have anything to kind of build on that poor resume. And he's done a fairly decent job handling himself in the NFL. Whereas Jameis, you know, had all this hype coming in. We all knew who he was. He performed very well, but fell into this cycle, you know, this negative media cycle almost immediately. And now he's still there. He's still, you know, it's still swirling around him. I feel like with him, it's just kind of, this is what we've come to expect. We've had time to do, you know, the court of public opinion has had time to make a decision on Jameis Winston based on evidence. He keeps giving us new stuff, you know, the incident at the student union, the crab legs, the, you know, the ongoing investigation, the possible signings, you know, he just keeps piling on and it's hard for us to look away, you know?
And I think a part of that is, and I'm not going to say Jameis is dumb because I don't think Jameis is dumb. I think Jameis is just he just doesn't get it. And I think he's the same as a lot of us when we were that age, when we were 20. If somebody followed us around with the camera and the media spotlight and, you know, looked at every interaction we had with our fellow students, they'd probably come up with some conclusions of us that weren't as flattering. Because when you're 20 and you're a guy and you're a star athlete, you know, you're getting all that attention, you're getting all the praise and your head gets blown up. You're probably going to do a lot of boneheaded stuff. Rare is the athlete that can handle that pressure with grace and poise. And that is why, you know, talking about RG3 again, like RG3 in college to me seemed more of a leader than RG3 in the pros.
Because
in college, you know, yeah, in college, he seemed to be that guy that could handle the pressure, that guy that could respond to the pressure. And you never heard about off-the-field stuff. You never heard about him being a knucklehead. You know, he was mature. Granted, he came from a military family, so that probably played into it a little bit. But you never heard about just stupid college kid decisions that Robert Griffin made. But with Jameis, it's like, oh, my man is out. He's young as like yeah. Let's be real about it. Jameis is making dumb country mistakes, stealing crab legs, man. Like, come on, Jameis.
That's down there.
Jameis,
it's better than cologne.
Come on, man.
It's better than stealing cologne.
Oh, and we'll get into that in segment four. Unfortunately, Cam won't be a part of that conversation. But yeah, if you're a pro athlete, or a college athlete, stop stealing, man. You can get people steal for you. That's what goons are for. We should get Dionne Warwick to make a new song, Marcus. Be like, help all the athletes out. Don't put your hands on people. Don't steal, because that's what goons are for. I'm Jameis, man. I can't talk about Jameis anymore, man. Like, can he go to the NFL already? Can we make an exception to the rule?
Does he have to stay? Does he have to stay another year? Was he a true
he's
freshman?
Done. He's a red shirt.
He can go. Uh-huh. Okay. Good.
Yeah. Let's put him in the draft right now because Mel Kiper Jr. has him like bouncing all around the board. Like one week he's the worst. I don't think he's gonna make it. He's just got immaturity issues. He's not in my top 20.
Listen, they said the same thing about Clowney last year. And what happened with Clowney? First pick. So. I'm not buying all this talk about his draft stock.
You still think Jameis is going to be the first quarterback off the board?
I think it'll come down to what he does at the combine, and if he blows
up
at the combine.
Knowing the experience that your New York Jets are having with black quarterbacks, Marcus.
Oh, the Jets went at the first pick, thank God.
If the Jets had a first pick, would they go black again?
They'll go Brett Hundley. he's blackish. We'll take him.
Like we want black, but not that black.
We'll take Mariota. He's something.
Like we cut Taj Boyd because we had our fill. Let's before we talk some NFL real quick. Let's kind of hit the top 25, like we mentioned. Cam, you had a chance to go over some of the big stories. A lot of movement over the past week or so. Any of these teams really stand out to you? And I guess we can start with the Mississippi teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think that both of the Mississippi teams are great stories. Honestly, we were sitting around watching football this past weekend and we all tried to come up with the most famous Mississippi State player we could in our heads and couldn't come up with a single one without having to go to the internet. I think the most famous alum Mississippi State has is Eric Molds, receiver for the Bills, who was, you know, he was good, but no one's ever going to be like, man, the Molds years up in Buffalo. You know, Mississippi State, I think, for me, you know, I have no issues pulling for them just because they've come out of nowhere. It's a good story. The problem for them and for everybody else in the SEC is that they have a murderer's row of a schedule left. They get Arkansas at home, at Alabama, and then close out the season at Ole Miss. So, you know, one of those two Mississippi teams is likely, they're going to knock each other out of the playoff if they're still there at the end of the year. One's going to go, one's not. You could say the same thing for Auburn and Alabama at 6-7. They've got the Iron Bowl. One of those teams is getting knocked. Same with Notre Dame, Florida State. So that's, you know, that's what's interesting with this top 10 is that it's going to wreck itself before the end of the, before the year's over. These guys can't just skate by. They have to play each other. So, I don't know, you know, good for the state of Mississippi just to have some notoriety as far as college football is concerned. They've kind of been an afterthought in the SEC, really for, I can, the last time I can think about Ole Miss even being ranked was maybe, or, you know, highly was, maybe 5 years ago. They were ranked like number four at the beginning of the year and then quickly fell.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, the only reason I know is because they were ranked four and came into South Carolina on a Thursday night game, and we beat them, and that started their slide. So good for the state of Mississippi, but otherwise it's a daunting road for pretty much all the top 10 teams ahead. It'd be interesting to see who are these, you know, one-loss teams all the way down into the 20s or so might be able to move their way up with everybody else on top beating each other up.
Real quick, I want to get Marcus's thoughts on Ole Miss, but you talk about the most famous player to come out of Mississippi State. I think you just pissed somebody off, Cam.
Who?
Fred Smoot is never going to read your blog again.
Oh, my God, no. Oh.
Fred Smoot.
I love Fred. Fred was an old soul for the Skins when he was there. And then, you know, the whole sex boat thing. Fred Smoot, he's done some stuff, man. He's seen some living.
Oh, that's our first. It took us 83 shows,
yeah,
and we finally got a Fred Smoot reference.
Nice.
I didn't know he's from Jackson. That's where my dad comes from. So all my relatives on that side of the family live in Jackson.
Mm, very cool.
Country for K.
Yeah. Shout out to Jackson. But yeah, Ole Miss, Marcus. I know some people out there are questioning the means by which these players came to school, but doesn't matter now. They're on the field and they're doing work, man. What do you think? Are these guys for real?
Sort of. I mean, it's tough because, you know, they beat A&M this past week at A&M. And I'm not really sure what to make of Texas A&M at this point. They started off great. Penny Hill, great story. They beat up TMs for Gamecocks on Thursday.
Oh, they did.
And that sort of, you know, was the, oh, we should take A&M seriously game. And then since then, they've had back-to-back losses now between Mississippi State and Ole Miss. So I think that the real telling game will be when they host Auburn in a couple weeks. And if they can get past Auburn, then that really is going to set up for the Ed Bowl of all times at the end of the month in November when they host Mississippi State. And I would love to see number one Mississippi State take on number two Ole Miss in the Ed Bowl. And I think that'd be a great atmosphere. I don't know if people across the country would so much care about the Ed Bowl outside of the South, but in terms of a number one versus number two in a sort of improbable year, I think that would be number one on my list.
Now, the last thing we're going to touch on in college football, Brother Cam, I need you to help broker a discussion in Mark a few weeks now.
Okay.
And it regards Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the belief that I think they can get through this schedule with one loss. And I think that loss will come to Florida State. Notre Dame currently sits at number 5, 6-0. If Notre Dame goes throughout the season with just one loss, granted they'd end the season a little bit earlier than everybody else because they wouldn't have a conference championship.
Right.
Do you see a way that Notre Dame gets into that Final Four, knowing how much the media loves Notre Dame?
Absolutely.
Well,
first question should be, do you think Notre Dame will lose more than once?
I don't know. You know, I was looking at their schedule. I honestly think they will. I think that they're going to lose to whether they lose to Florida State or not. They've got their three biggest games are all on the road. They're at Florida State. They're at Arizona State and they're at USC to close out the year. I think they're gonna drop two of those. Say they don't. Say if Nate, if you're right, going on your scenario, if they just lose to Florida State, if they have one loss, the media loves Notre Dame. You're right, but you know who doesn't? Tyrone Willingham. You know who's on the playoff committee? Tyrone Willingham. I know that one man out of I don't know if it's a dozen or so, maybe 13 people that are on this committee. I know that one guy doesn't hold, you know, all of the power, but he's not going to have nice thoughts about Notre Dame. I'm just going to throw that out there. And he's, you know, I was scrolling through that the other day to see who was on that committee and was so surprised just to see him on there. Since, you know, what was his last head coaching gig? Was it Washington?
I think it was Washington.
And that's been a minute. Washington's been through, you know, they've had Sarkisian, or they, you know, they had Sarkisian and now he's already gone. It's been a while since he's, you know, really been around. So I found him an interesting presence. Listen, on that board.
I'll tell you what that's about. That's called, we need someone black who is a male on this list, because if not,
you know,
we'll have people upset that, hey, we got all these white males, and they did bring Condoleezza Rice in as a woman voice. But I think that was more about, hey, we need to cover our ass.
Yeah, I kind of saw that as well, that, you know, that they could possibly be the token members since
if you're going to pick a token black guy, I mean, I really can't think of another coach out there or a former coach who has a better, I guess, overall resume in terms of college football than Willingham, so.
No, I think you're right, yeah.
I think it was either going to be Ty Willingham or Turner Gill, and Turner Gill got the Liberty gig.
He's had a tough break since he didn't get the Auburn job when they picked Gene Chizik over him, which, you know what, is really unfortunate, because I think if Turner Gill is put in the same situation with Cam Newton, they still win the national championship and he has a job somewhere, because Gene Chizik, for my money, was just in memory, is the worst coach to win a national championship. He just did not do much for that team, and it showed the fact that he was, you know, in there, won a national title, and then was out within, what, 3 or 4 years? That's a story you don't hear much about, you know.
Yeah, did he even last 3 years, Marcus? Was it three?
Chizik? It might have been three at the most.
That was crazy. Like, usually a championship buys you at least 4 years.
Oh yeah, I think that really just proved kind of his incompetence. The fact that they were ready to just get rid of him that quickly after a national championship. He's home, you know, taking care of his leather jacket somewhere. But
all right, it is time that the time that people wait for each and every week. Time for Marcus and I to go head to head and pick some NFL. But real quick before we do that, you are a Redskins fan, aren't you, Brother Cam?
You are correct, and well, it's trying times.
Let me ask you this, and I apologize ahead of time if you don't share these sentiments, but I'm speaking to you as a conduit for Redskins Nation, and I just want to say, getting rid of the black quarterback didn't make much of a difference now, did it?
No.
Your accurate pocket quarterback, and what did he do, Cam? What did he do?
I want RG3 back so badly. I never wanted Kirk in there in the first place. I always kind of thought that Kirk Cousins was like this weird cartoon parody of all white quarterbacks. Like, he's just, that's how I felt ever since he was at Michigan State. He's just so excitable, and he's such a nice guy. Like, it's, I don't know. And then
basically he's Rudy as a quarterback.
Pretty much. And then, you know, he has, I think, the number two saddest face after an interception in the NFL behind the incomparable Eli Manning. And, you know, now I've gotten to see that so often. I think that's one of the things for me when I saw a lot of other Redskins fans.
How bad was that Giants game? Like,
oh, it was unbearable. I watched every second of that game out of some sort of just like masochistic sort of, I needed to finish and just see how bad it could get. But that's one of the things that I think a lot of the people who were screaming for Cousins, you know, when RG3 was bad last year and at the beginning this year when it was still kind of like, you know, has RG3 really earned this? Cousins has thrown, I don't quote me 100% on this stat, but Cousins has thrown an interception, I think, in every single game he's played. If not every game, there's one that he maybe did not. But he, you know, for, you know, all the, you know, decent numbers that he's put up, last weekend, I think he had 350 yards, two touchdowns, and then he threw three picks in the fourth quarter to really, you know, the Cardinals just kept letting us stay in that game, and then he kept giving them the ball back and then finished off the game with a pick six. You know, those are the kinds of mistakes you just can't have. And, you know, whether Griffin makes those same mistakes or not is to be seen, because we haven't seen him in quite some time. But, yeah, I think the quarterback situation in D.C. is bad all around, just because we don't know what kind of RG3 is coming back on the field. And we do know that we have a turnover-prone Kirk Cousins who can't, you know, who has no escapability. If RG3 has 50% of the escapability once had, Kirk Cousins goes down with, you know, with a hand in the back. So
he's had a couple starts where he hasn't thrown picks. But
he has, okay.
The stat I saw over the weekend was he's got more interceptions now in his 8 starts compared to Griffin's 30 starts. He's thrown 18 picks in 8 starts. Griffin's thrown 17 picks in 30 starts. So,
yeah, he's just interception prone, and really in the, you know, in the worst possible moments. Really, it's all, like, for me, he puts up decent numbers to keep us in the game in the first half. For some reason, the teams that we're playing just kind of take the throttle off in the second half and let us hang around. And then, you know, it's just the turnovers that have been killing the Skins. So,
Colt McCoy, baby, Colt McCoy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Colt McCoy is like whispering in the coach's ear. He's like, hey, you know who wouldn't have thrown that interception? A former Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. Who got 2 thumbs and hadn't thrown a pick all season? This guy.
You know what? And if they have the Titans this weekend, and if we lose to the Titans, or if Kirk throws interceptions against the Titans, you're going to see Colt McCoy. There's no doubt. There's no doubt.
What's the last time Colt McCoy started a game?
Browns. What, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I believe so. He the Niners was last year, right? So he didn't play for
them. Yeah,
he
didn't play for the Niners, yeah.
Some must have been, 2 years ago. Actually, no.
Longer than that?
3 years ago.
Okay.
2011 looks like his last start.
This is crazy. Like, this is how quickly we go through quarterbacks now. Like, Colt McCoy has been in the league for 4 years. Seems like he's been in the league for like 8 years, though. Like, the way people talk about him, the way he's just like kind of such an afterthought. It's like 4 years ago, somebody thought high enough of him to take him in the third round, and now, what, he can't play?
I mean, he is 28. He's getting up. I mean, he's not getting up there, but he's older than you might think.
Oh, yeah. And then you've got, you know, the same thing has already happened, you know, is going to continue to happen to Brandon Whedon. I mean, that was just one of the worst draft picks of all time as far as I'm concerned. You know, he's going to suffer that same fate, you know.
What a terrible draft pick. Like, that was
just
Chris Winkie looked at that dude and was like, man, he too old.
Just awful. He was a 29-year-old rookie. I have one of my best friends here is a diehard Browns fan. His entire family is. And so I've gotten to be close to some Cleveland pain. And it's really, you know, it was the most Browns pick of all time, I think. I think it was.
That whole draft, because they picked, didn't they get a Whedon and Richardson in the same draft?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wasted draft.
By the way, all you Cowboy fans who are so giddy about your team, just remember, you were one Romo injury away from Brandon Whedon as your starting quarterback.
I thought it was going to happen at the beginning of the year. I was so...
It's going to happen. It's going to be such the Cowboys thing to happen. Romo's going to get hurt, and then have to turn to Brandon Whedon as your starting quarterback. And
oh, yeah.
8-8 will be...
Eight and eight is real. Don't let the 5-1 fool you, man. They only have to go 3-7 over these next 10. 8-8 is real.
And their schedule is pretty. Yeah, it gets a little harder towards the end of the season. They finish 3 of their last 4 games on the road.
Have they played the Redskins yet?
No, they play them Monday night in 2 weeks, so I'm going to be in Texas.
That's two wins right there.
They close the season at Washington.
So they're going to win at least seven games.
That's seven. And then they have Jacksonville, so that's eight.
Eight, yeah.
And then the other games, Arizona.
That's a loss.
The Giants this week.
Question
mark, yeah.
Depends on what Giants team shows up.
So they did Giants twice. They did Philadelphia twice. Chicago and Indianapolis.
I say they split with the Giants. They beat Arizona, they lose the rest.
I'd be fine with them going 9-7 and still missing the playoffs. I don't. That's all that really. That's all that I'm concerned about.
Well, what we're concerned about is this week's NFL picks. Marcus, can you update the people on how things have been going so far?
Yes. So last week, week six, myself, you can call me Mr. Perfect because I went 5-0 last week. Nate, you went 2-3, which means now after 6 weeks, we are all even at 17-13.
I just want to know who you called, one of your degenerate gambling buddies out there in Vegas, to get this inside information.
Listen, if you take away that first week, that 0-5 week, I'm doing pretty well.
So what I decided to do this week is we're going to put the power in the hands of Cam Powell, I guess, this week. Cam is going to pick four games from the Sunday schedule and one the Monday night football game, and Marcus is going to give us the spread, and Marcus and I will choose these games. And so, Cam, you could have a big effect on the ultimate outcome of this contest.
All right. Let me find the four games that I'm most interested in here. It's not going to be the Redskins-Titans game. Just going to throw that out there. I don't think anyone wants to have to pay attention to that.
I don't even think they're sending a camera crew out to that game.
They better. I'm paying for Sunday ticket this year.
By the way, the Redskins are 6-point favorites. That's
really?
Give me the Titans. We were picking that game. Boy, I don't trust them covering by six.
No.
Okay. Let's see. Why don't you guys pick Seattle at St. Louis? I think one could be interesting just based on Seattle's, a little bit of a slump they're looking at right now.
Okay. All right, Marcus, give us the spread on that.
All right. Seattle minus -7 on the road. Short week for the Rams.
Yeah, they did just play. Give me the Hawks.
Give me Seattle.
All right, yep. Next game.
Let's see. Another 1 o'clock, big AFC battle, Cincinnati at Indy.
Now, Cam, I know you're a frequent listener of the show.
Yes,
so you've heard the ongoing debate about a certain head coach for the Bengals. What are your thoughts on Marvin Lewis, man?
Man, I've got respect for Marvin because he was he was with the Redskins staff a long time ago. I think in the post Spurrier area. Post-Spurrier era, he was an interim head coach for us for a little while. I don't know. I am not sure. His teams have never really been in the position to had the talent to really make it. The 1 year that they did when they had Carson Palmer, who got injured by the Steelers in the very beginning of that playoff game, that kind of cut their legs out from under them. I don't know. I'm not sure I would trust Marvin Lewis in the Super Bowl. If it really came down to it, decision making, I don't trust him
in a wild card game at this point.
Yeah, he always looks really confused. Unless the Bengals have got to be beating up on somebody. They just had that tie this past weekend. Granted, that one's on the kicker. That was a chip shot, but. I don't know if I trust him in the big game. If it's going to come down to a coaching move, depends on who's on the other sideline as well. But I'd probably push that one.
All right. So what was the spread on that game, Marcus?
Colts minus -3.5.
The Colts are good for a close game. Where are you going?
Going Colts. Going Andrew Luck.
You know what? Give me Marvin.
All right. You can have the Bengals defense.
By the way, Cam, greatest Redskins interim coach of all time was Terry Rubisky.
I totally forgot about that. And you know what? That's a sad statistic that you can even throw out, that there are multiple people in the running for greatest Redskins interim head coach of all time. That's sad. Okay, let's see. Let's see.
So we got two more Sunday games.
Yeah, a little more under the radar. By the way,
Terry Rubisky has the same number of wins as Jay Gruden, so one.
Awesome. let's go a little more under
that
the radar.
That coaching list, like if you look up the Redskins all-time coaching list, that's got to be ridiculous. Like
List and the quarterbacks list, man, they are comical.
You have the greats in terms of winning total, and then you just look down at the very bottom, and you'll see, like, just random names. Jim Zorn, Terry Rubisky, Jay Gruden. Jim Zorn. Oh, yes.
All right, what was your game?
Let's go Kansas City at San Diego. A little bit more under the radar. Still, you know, pretty big AFC game, though.
Yeah.
405 at San Diego.
What's the line, Marcus? San Diego minus -4.
I'll take KC.
Chargers.
All right, next.
All right. Going to give you a tougher one on the betting line, just because it should be kind of outlandish, and we don't know how this team will play. Arizona at Oakland.
The Raiders came through for me last week. Arizona minus -4.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, that surprises me.
Somebody's out there.
Carson Palmer going back to Oakland.
Oh yes, that's the big rivalry.
That's the storyline.
That's the storyline. You know what? I'll go with the Raiders.
I'll go with the Raiders again. They did me well last week. I'll go with the Raiders.
All right. Those are 4 Sunday games and Monday night.
Houston at Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh minus -3.5. Oof, it's going to be a terrible game.
Yeah. We've had a lot of terrible primetime games this year, Monday and Thursday.
And Sunday.
Yeah.
The Thursday night ones are rough, man. I can't watch them most of the time.
I've only enjoyed one Thursday night game all year.
It's generally just kind of like scrub matchups, and they either go the way you think they're going to, or they're just like just low scoring, just bad football. A week that's that short is just bad for both teams. It's just not a good product to put on the field, honestly. If you're looking at it from the NFL standpoint,
honestly, if I were them, I'd get rid of it. But then I can throw away that money.
No, it's all about it.
See, what'd you say? The line was 4,
3.5,
3.5. I'm gonna ride with the Hampton Roads own Mike Tomlin.
Got to.
I'll go Steelers.
See, Marcus picked a lot of the same picks as I did. So I think right now he got it tied up, so now he's trying to play defense against me.
We had 2 different picks.
I see your strategy. So that's our picks. Again, you can follow the picks every week and cheer on your favorite side, Team Vandenberg or Team Nate. But before we let you go, Cam, we've mentioned a couple times on a couple of occasions that you are a fan of the professional football team located in D.C.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's your take on this whole name thing, man?
Oh, man. I wish I had written it down on like a note card somewhere so I could just get it out real quick every time. So for me, if you really look at the origin of the word, yes, it is a racist term. It is a racial epithet for however long ago it's been, however it's been reappropriated. It's a racial term. It's I think that that the name should be changed. I personally am not I'm not in the group that's calling for it to be changed. I suppose my flip side here is that while I do think that it should be changed and that it will be changed, it's kind of an inevitable thing. I don't necessarily think it's something for PC wide America and kind of the media firestorm to change. I think that pieces like the Daily Show's piece that brought in real, you know, it gave a face to the Native Americans who really, you know, are upset with this name and had them confront actual Redskins fans who were ambushed, who afterward had said, had we known that we would have been meeting with members of Native American tribes, we still would have appeared on the show. We wouldn't have worn our jerseys. What is that? That's the whole thing. If you can't, you know, own up to it, if you say that the name shouldn't be changed, but you wouldn't be, you know, you wouldn't be comfortable wearing anything Redskins in front of somebody like that, you know, you're falling into hypocrisy there. I feel like that it can, you know, it should be changed. It'll come within the next 5 years. I feel like I'm going to say five because Snyder's going to hold on for dear life. It's going to take a long time, but that, you know, it's not my place to decide. I'll happily support any of the Native American groups trying to get it changed, but it's not for somebody who has no idea what it's like to be called that or to associate with that, to decide. So.
Yeah, that was a good answer, my young Padawan.
Why, thank you.
So you're becoming a Jedi. Oh, but good talking to you as always, Cam. Hopefully next time won't be almost a year since we touch base with you. But in the meantime, if people want to, you know, check out some of your writing or, you know, just kind of get into your mind and see what you want to talk about, whether it's sports or music or anything going on down there in South Carolina. Where can people follow you?
Oh, man. Well, I haven't been writing quite as much recently because I've been focused on kind of a different project. My buddy and I have recently opened up our own business where we own a bus and we are doing tours of craft breweries down here in South Carolina, taking you between all the breweries. And so I've been spending a lot of time doing that. Which you can find that on Facebook at Columbia Brew Bus. That's the name of the business. And I handle that page, so, you know, you can kind of, you know that it's me behind all the posts and things like that, and I generally keep my same writing style when I'm doing that. Recently, I just started doing some music blogging for a friend's magazine called Caravan Arts Collective that's about to put out their first issue within the next couple weeks. That's also based here in Columbia, and we have some correspondents in Charleston as well. It's kind of been all over the place recently, between, you know, trying to run a business and still, you know, playing music and writing when I can. So, you know, but I'm enjoying it, having a good time.
That sounds cool. Like the business sounds really intriguing.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, it's that kind of business model has popped up around the Southeast in areas like Charleston or Asheville or Charlotte that have multiple breweries. People, you know, pay a ticket to get on this bus, and it takes them between all of them, and included in your ticket price, you get samples at each facility, and you get.
That was going to be my question, man. Do I get to get turned up on this trip?
Yes, that's why we're driving you, man. You need somebody to drive you. So, you know, Columbia is a newcomer kind of to the craft beer scene. Our first full production brewery just opened up within the last 2 years, and now we're up to three with a fourth one opening up in January. So, when I heard that the third one was opening up, I just kind of thought to myself, man, you know, a business like the bus model could work here now. And so we just kind of ran with it. It's been well received, and, you know, it's still very new for us, but it's going well.
Good stuff. Give out the Facebook page one more time.
Columbia Brew Bus.
Columbia Brew Bus. Check them out on Facebook. That's good stuff, Cam.
Hey, thanks, man. Thank you guys again for having me. Yeah,
I might even go as far as to say that was hot fire.
I I appreciate that. If you can, yeah, I will be listening in the next couple weeks to see if you get that hot fire drop in, man, because I'm gonna post every single one, like, hot fire drop it 5128 in this week's KOS podcast.
All right, good stuff, brother. So that is Cam Powell. We are the Kings of Sports. Coming up next, more athletes behaving badly in segment 4. No goma pile, I'm Sergeant Slaughter. I keep my shit cooked to order in order to satisfy my people in Georgia and cross the border. And across the border, the essays are getting smarter. They got flour for tortillas and lettuce for enchiladas. If you follow, wink, wink, no doubt we don't speak in a blink. Them folks can have you sleeping in the clink. I'm shitting on niggas and peeing on the seat. It's the nigga, the B-I-G-B-O-I-O-U-T. Now party people in the club, it's time to cut a rug and throw the juice up in the sky just for the shutter buzz. I'm double fisted and you empty, you can grab a club. Boy, stop, I'm just playing. Let me get you up. You're in my sins. Why? It's after 12 club like a high B. A beehive, cause not everybody buzzing around me. Could it be the way that the verses sounding came up on the ghetto boys and the underground king toys? I had a chrome calling printed brown thing. Pink looked like Rubia when the sun was shining. Known to keep a bad bitch, no niggas beside me. And if you... Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Nate and Marcus holding things down, getting ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we have to leave you guys with what you wait for each and every episode, and that is the often imitated but never ever duplicated segment 4, where we look at the ratchetness in the world of sports, pop culture, and other forms of entertainment, and throw it in the pot and serve you that ratchet gumbo with a little bit of our opinions on the side. So Marcus, you alluded to it during second down. Jameis Winston, not the only football player this year to get in trouble for taking things that don't belong to him. Shout out to the, what was the name of that store? Publix?
Publix, yep.
Shout out to Publix. But there is a professional football player who got into some trouble for having some sticky fingers, shall we say. And if the people haven't heard this story, Marcus, let them know what's going on.
Yeah, Joseph Randle, battered running back for the Dallas Cowboys, was arrested for shoplifting at Dillard's on Monday, and he stole a tester bottle of Gucci Guilty Black cologne. I'm not making that up, people. That's the name of the product, Guilty Black cologne.
Talk about telegraphing.
Yeah, and polo underwear, because, you know, if you smell good, you gotta have clean drawers, because those might come off at some point. So he got caught on camera, was charged with a Class B misdemeanor, and booked into jail. Posted bond. He's now free. But really? You got the money to pay for it. It's Dillard's. How busy could Dillard's be that you couldn't wait the 30 seconds for the lady to ring you up before you
left? What makes it even crazier, Marcus, is Randle was on a Dallas radio station the weekend before the incident, and he was bragging about, you know, how he likes to buy expensive sneakers and he got the money to burn. And first of all, he doesn't really, because he's making like $500,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, for me, that'd be phenomenal. For you, that'd be pretty good. But for an NFL player, like, that money is, that could be here today, gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you on the radio on Friday talking about, you know, how big a baller you are. And then on Monday, you get caught with the five-figure discount trying to take, not even a full bottle, man.
The tester bottle.
The tester bottle that everybody else has used.
Yeah.
Come on, brother. You know, half of it probably water, because they water it down. The tester bottle of, what was it, Gucci?
Gucci Guilty Black.
Guilty Black. And you are a guilty black.
Yes, you are guilty. Not according, not in the eyes of his father, by the way. His father has chimed in, and he said this, quote, "My son is not a thief, okay? He was just trying to get his baby out of there because she was clowning." Oh, this must be crying. This says clowning, which is being funnier.
She was tap dancing.
I'll just read the quote. This is in USA Today. Or this is, not USA Today. This is WFAA.com. She was clowning pretty bad. All he was going to do was take the baby out, and then he was going to come back and take care of his business. So,
maybe the baby was involved in the hustle. Yeah. Maybe she was clowning around. She was juggling. It was like distracting that, people.
Like that Dave Chappelle stand up. The baby in the corner selling the weed.
Hey, I snuck in the club.
Hey, baby, what are you doing? Selling weed. But oh shit. So yeah, his father has come out on the defense. Listen, it pops. If you're listening, if I get arrested for something, you can skip the statement in the media. I'm probably guilty, so no need to defend me.
And he comes from a long line of cologne stealers. Like his uncle used to steal Jupe. His other uncle stole Dracar Noir.
Oh man, I used to wear Dracar in high school.
His daddy used to steal Brute. All the old, his grandpappy stole English leather.
Man,
you remember that English leather?
Yeah, Dracar was strong. I used to have I had Michael Jordan cologne.
Yes.
In high school, that also smelled terrible.
Jupe was one of my favorites though. Jupe was like, ladies love Jupe for a minute, and then Cool Water kind of.
Cool Water and Curve were like the 1-2.
Yeah.
For early 2000s.
But yeah, I had a little spray bottle of Dracar when I was in college. Yeah, I think it didn't even make it through the semester. That's how much I was using that.
Wow.
But yeah, that was like some. Like, you old enough to know what smells good, but you not old enough to know how to apply it judiciously.
Yeah.
Just like with these kids now, these bros with the body spray, yeah. It's like you walking past a dude with an Affliction t-shirt smelling like a cloud of Axe body spray.
Yeah, just, like, just take on, a shower.
Yeah, right. But yeah, getting back to Joseph Randle, like This doesn't make any sense whatsoever because, I mean, wouldn't that baby alibi allegedly be, wouldn't that be a part of the police report? Like, if he's there with a crying baby or a clowning baby, a baby in face paint, wouldn't that be?
Yeah, because the baby would have to go with the cops.
Right. Like, wouldn't that be part of the story?
Yeah.
We got this little baby that looks like Patch Adams. I don't know what we gonna do with her. Looking like Krusty the Clown up in this piece. Yeah, so I don't buy that story. And then the second thing which makes it even worse is he's DeMarco Murray's backup, right? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't he be able to evade some rent-a-cops at Dillard's, man?
You can never evade the cameras.
That's true.
That's what caught him, was the security camera.
Oh, see, I thought the security guards actually...
Oh, no. They need to talk them on camera.
Like, man, if you can't get through the security guards at Dillard's, how you going to get through the Eagles linebacker core?
Yeah.
Like, DeMarco, you better not get hurt at all. I know we're rushing you 40 times a game, but you can't get hurt. We got Mr. Polo Draws backing you up. And he only stole two pairs of draws. What was it, two pairs?
Yeah, I think so.
He stole two pairs of draws. Like, come on, man. Like, did you have a hot date you had to get to?
Well, I guess he was, so I read more of the story. I guess he was with the child and the mother of the child as well.
Hmm.
Which goes into the argument that, hey, if it's that bad, tell the mom to, hey, take the kid back to the car while I pay for this stuff, and I'll meet you outside. Or if it's that bad, just leave the stuff inside and go back to him. And it's not like you can't, you know. Listen, first of all, the tester bottle's going to get him caught up because why would you, if you're going to pay for it.
There's no price tag on the tester bottle.
There's no price tag on the tester bottle. Why would you grab the tester bottle? You would say, hey, person behind the counter, I would like to purchase this bottle of Gucci Guilty Black. Can I have a fresh box, please?
So no, let me use this one everybody else is using.
Yeah, let me buy this one. Let me get a discount on this open bottle of cologne. No, it doesn't work like that at Dillard's. So that the tester bottle is going to get him caught up. I can't buy a story if he's taking the tester bottle of cologne.
Yeah. And two pairs of polo drawers.
Yeah.
Like, that tells me, like, he was buying that for her. Like, she made him an ultimatum or something. Like, he wasn't going to get none unless he had some polo drawers and the Gucci cologne.
And I, you know, think about the Emma case in WWE when she got popped for Walmart. That sounded like it was something to do with one of those self-checkout things.
Yeah.
I believe her story more than I believe the Randalls. And Mr. Randall talking about my son is not a thief.
You know how it is, Marcus. Sometimes the baby be clowning, you know, riding a little unicycle. this baby seems to be like the smartest person in the family.
Yeah.
Baby, what are you doing with that Gucci? Trying to sell on the black market. Guilty black. Like that is just the perfect button on that story, like
of all the clones,
like the headline writers in Dallas are gonna have a field day with that if he gets convicted of it.
Yeah, it sounds like he's gonna be fined and not suspended. So,
well, I will say this, Marcus, to Joseph Randall's credit, if you're going to be a dumb NFL player that shoplifts, this is the year to do it, man. This is your season.
Small potatoes compared to the rest of your peers. Yes.
You could have stole two bottles of Gucci Guilty Black.
Yeah.
And Goodell would have been like, don't do it again, man.
Yeah.
Go back and tell Mr. Dillard you're sorry and we good. Like, this is the year to do petty crimes.
By the way, if he was smart, he could have bought it on Amazon for $52 instead of the retail price of $84 at Dillard's. So, shop online. Oh, wait, this looks like it's a female cologne or perfume.
Really?
At least on Amazon, the one I'm looking at says it's a spray for a woman.
Let me see, because, you know, sometimes they make, like, the matching.
Oh, the matching okay, there's, never mind, there's one for men, too. So they have matching.
Which I never got that. Like, do you and your fiancé wear matching fragrances?
Nah.
Like I never got the appeal of that. Like, I think a woman should have her scent and a dude should have his scent. It's part of the attraction and the pheromones and all that stuff. These bottles are something else, though.
Yeah, it's like,
they look like Bacardi bottles almost.
It's some in the store. I'm gonna have to take a sniff of the stuff to see how good it is.
Maybe he wasn't even trying to buy it. Maybe the test of it smelled that good. He's like, I got to have it.
Yeah.
Grab the drawers, baby. Let's get out of here. But Joseph, the baby's clowning. Leave her. Oh, man. So I think that's going to end it, man, because no matter what you want to say about Jameis Winston, I think he looks better by comparison. A college kid with no money stealing crab legs versus an NFL player making $500,000 a year stealing cologne and draws.
Yep.
Like, I'm sure you probably got a deal with Under Armour. They can give you draws for free.
You can get some Dallas Cowboy draws, probably.
Yes, they call the trainer up. Hey, man, I need a couple pairs of draws. Like, yeah, so there's more to this than meets the eye. So, but yeah, and I think Pops Randall with the I really want to hear whether that was just a typo or was that what he actually said.
I hope it wasn't a typo,
because that adds a whole different element to the story. And the baby was out there clowning, man. So, that's segment four for this week, and that is the show for this week. We had a good time this week. Great, good discussion with Cam Powell. You know, we only planned to go like 30 minutes, and I think we doubled that, Marcus. So
yeah, we did.
You get a good conversation going. We're like, you know what? Let's keep the tape rolling and let the people hear it. So shout out to Cam. He'll be back on in the future. Hopefully it won't take a year. Shout out to you guys for listening. As always, you can download the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Like the show, rate the show, review it, and then share it with your friends. Share it with people you know that love sports. Share it with Colin Cowherd if you know Colin Cowherd. Oh, real quick, I got an update, Marcus, on the Tag Me a Date
discussion
we had last week. I'm not sure if we were followed by Steve Glenwick, but I know he favorited a couple of our tweets.
Oh, really?
That referenced Tag Me a Date. So I think this is a good news, bad news situation. The good news is we could probably get Steve Glenwick on to have a conversation about Tag Me a Date.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is, if he listened to last week's show by now, he may not return our email.
Yes, he would. He'll take any promotion he can get.
Hey, come on, Steve. You got an open invitation. We gonna keep it real with you. I mean, we're not gonna be mean to you, but we're gonna keep it real with you. You know, it's probably nothing that the mainstream media hadn't said.
We'll bring Sierra on for that. If that happens, we'll bring Sierra on as the female voice.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. Yeah. So that's what. Once I get off of this recording session, I'll hit Sierra up and I'll hit Steve Glenwick up and see if we can make that happen after you get back from Texas.
All right, that works.
Yeah, if you get back from Texas.
Yeah.
So for those out there, if you want to send preliminary get well wishes to Marcus Vandenberg, Marcus, where can they hit you up with those get well messages?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MarcoWill, MarcoWill.
And for me, you can check me out on Twitter in the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show at CosPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. Finally passed 200 Twitter followers for the show.
There you go.
Slowly but surely gaining momentum. And we may have a new follower in Steve Glenwick. And that may be I might be able to get a discount on those prices.
You should. You should be able to get a free trial.
Yeah. Yeah. I might be able to get a discount. I won't have to pay for the Cruiserweight Champion package. Let me holler at Steve Glenwick. You can check us out. I lost my train of thought.
Facebook.
We already did you. We already did me. Yep, we did the show. You can check out the show page on Facebook, facebook.com/ the Kings of Sport. Go in there, join the group, join the discussions. We post there fairly regularly. You can also check out Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com powers the Kings of Sport. And they have the largest variety of sports, pop culture, pro wrestling, and just general music and entertainment stories and opinions and podcasts on the web. At least that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I'm using my facts and statistics like Colin Cowherd. Pipe Bomb Radio. That's the other thing. Pipe Bomb Radio. I'm a part of the Pipe Bomb Radio team now, and each and every Tuesday on Blog Talk Radio, we speak with someone in the world of pro wrestling. This week's show, which will be up online by the time you hear this podcast, I think we're going to be talking with Lanny Poffo, the Genius.
Oh, okay.
Yes, last week we talked to Awesome Kong, a.k.a. Karma.
How did that go?
WWE and TNA. Very cool. She's you kind of tipped me off, you know, that she was kind of a L.A. girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very chill. Like my phone was acting up, so I didn't get to hop on until the very end. But I was listening to the call, listening to the interview while I was waiting for the Skype to reconnect. But she was real cool. She's gonna come back on for a part two, and she's got a Kickstarter out. So a lot of the guests we have on have Kickstarters, which is a really interesting way that kind of wrestlers are taking their own careers into their hands because there's no union, there's no overall organization for wrestlers. So unless you're in the WWE or to a lesser extent TNA or ROH, you ain't really got a regular source of income.
Mm-hmm.
So these side projects are interesting. But this week we're going to talk to Lanny Poffo, the Genius. There'll probably be some talk about his brother, the Macho Man Randy Savage. But I used to like the Genius back in the day, so it'll be interesting to talk to him.
He reminds me of Sandow, or Sandow reminds me of the Genius.
Yeah, he's kind of like the new millennium version of the Genius.
Yeah.
Like, I do hope, though, like, secretly, even though I don't know how good it'd be for the listeners, that he just speaks in rhymes the whole time.
That'd be great.
I think that your last question was great. That's a really good question, Nate.
There you go.
I really enjoyed being on your show, but it's getting late, so I've got to go.
30 minutes of that.
Yeah. Even when he couldn't hear the question, he'd be like, I think your mic went out, my friend. Could you repeat the question again? Like, just like, that would be excellent. Like, I think the listeners would get tired after like two or three questions, but I would just,
yeah, so would the Genius. You know, he would not do it one time, I don't think. So
yeah. I was trying to make my poem gimmick legit, but I think I'm going to stop. I'm tired of this shit. Genius out.
Rack 'em.
And we're out as well. We'll be back with another show next week. TJ McClune, I believe we're going to reach out to TJ and see if he can join the show next week.
Yep.
And so that'll be cool. We haven't talked to TJ in probably about a year.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like homecoming. We're bringing back all the old guests. Had Cam this week and TJ next week, potentially. So keep it locked here to the Kings of Sport, the show that's always giving you that hot fire. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network. Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks.